If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Micro Brew. We have made it 162 games down, and the Milwaukee Brewers have 97 victories. That is alone as the winningest season of Milwaukee Brewers baseball. It ended in a very positive place on Sunday, a 4-2 victory over the Reds. The Reds, by the way, still making it to the playoffs with the loss by the Mets and the on the same day. So crazy ending to the season for both teams. Both teams get what they want. The Brewers are the number one seed. All good things. We'll talk about all of that. We'll talk about some of the bad too. Right up front though, I want to tell you, you're maybe not getting, well, we're going to try to give you our best selves, our best version, but it was a long day. Kurt, of course, was at the game, and then we had the Packer game that we were watching. So this is a late night recording. We have just witnessed a 40-40 tie between the Cowboys and the Packers. So we're like trying to keep it together, maybe stay awake. So this is not our best, but also we will be doing another podcast this week, and we want that to be a mailbag episode of the Microbrew Podcast. So reach out to us with your questions. You can reach out to Kurt or myself on Twitter or Blue Sky. You can email me, jradcliffe@gannett.com. That's Jay Radcliffe with an E on the end of Radcliffe, Gannett, two N's, two T's, and send us your questions. And we'll answer as many of them as we can on an episode that's likely to arrive later this week, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday, not sure yet, but we will be coming back with a little bit more. As of right now, Kurt, are we going to make it through this? We can do this, Kurt. I believe in us. Do you believe in us?
Look, we're just going to give it all we got for four quarters, maybe an overtime period. Yeah. And maybe at the end of it, we can kick a field goal to tie.
Maybe we'll even set it up so that we do kick the field goal to tie, because maybe that's just for some reason what we want to do. The Brewers did not want to do that. They did not want to tie with the Philadelphia Phillies for the best record in baseball. And so they went ahead and won on Sunday. That gave them 97 wins. They're the only team in baseball with 97 wins. That was good. I'm proud of me.
So this is a little bit of a pedantic thing. And by a little bit, I mean like extremely. But there was a lot of, like, the Brewers themselves were saying, oh, we clinched the best record in baseball after Saturday's game. And while that was, you clinched at least tying for the best record in baseball, but you are not the best in the sense that I think of the word, maybe the literal sense, if you are tied at 96 wins with the Phillies. Anyway, that's just something I had to get off my chest right away. There's more important things to discuss.
I don't think it was pedantic at all. I was thinking about it the whole time. Time an announcer was like, oh, they've clinched the best. No. They've clinched the number one seed.
And share. Yes. You've clinched a share of the best record in baseball. I think it's maybe not significantly cooler, but like non-0% cooler to just have the best record in baseball. Like if you're looking back 100%. And you go, oh, okay, well they were tied. So having that claim, like, I'm not saying they should hang a banner for it, but when you're talking about it, like, you can't claim it as your own in the future. And now they can. They did it. They won Sunday. 97 wins. Good for them.
Absolutely good for them. I do think that matters. That's a really cool thing. And there are definitely, in most seasons, the best team in baseball is going to have more than 97 wins. But there are plenty of seasons where they have 97 or even, I think there was even a 96 in the not too distant past. I don't recall for sure, but this is still something that they have not done since 1982. I do think it's a very cool setup. Now we could talk about how they've only won four games in the last 2 weeks and went from surefire season, you know, surefire franchise record to, oh boy, they need to rally for a win on Sunday to even get to that place. We will talk about all of that. But let's at least touch on what we think comes next for them, or what we think is best for them. They are going to face the winner of the San Diego Padres and the Chicago Cubs. That series gets underway on Tuesday at Wrigley Field. It is a best of three. Brewers fans know these series very well, these wild card series, because they lost in each of the last two seasons in one of them. Home field advantage did nothing for them against the Diamondbacks nor the Mets. Oh, the Mets. We could talk about the Mets. LOL, the Mets. Right now, the Brewers have a week, and I gotta, like, Kurt, the Brewers have never been in this position because this format is only, this is only the fourth year of it. They've never had a week of, you know, 6 days off, 5 days off, I guess it is. They've never had that before. So this is a unique situation, unique format for them. They've never been here. Fans have never been able to watch a whole week of baseball, or at least like a series of three game series without, without anything impacting the Brewers directly. That's kind of cool. What should they want, though? Should they want the Padres? Should they want the Cubs? Obviously, it doesn't really matter. They're both playoff teams. They could easily win. They could easily lose. I don't know, but the Cubs have had some injury stuff. Cade Horton is probably unavailable. Maybe he makes game five of the division series, but he's out. That's a big loss for them. He's one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in the second half in baseball, ERA-wise. I believe that was still true. So that's a big loss. The Padres are not the better team on paper. I don't know. What do you think, Kurt? What is the best situation for the Milwaukee Brewers?
I think on paper, the Brewers, in my opinion, they match up better with the Padres. And plus, I think I just feel like they would play looser. You worry a little bit about playing tighter in whatever the atmosphere is against the Cubs. But the reality is, and this is not just some media-friendly answer that I've been PR trained, like a baseball player would be, JR. You don't
not all of them.
You do not pick your opponent. You don't get into that game. You don't say, oh, this matchup would be better than, like, it's just you play who you get, and you got to beat who's in front of you. You start getting, I mean, it doesn't matter who we say, but like you start getting into trouble, I think, when you start to pick out the opponent. Like, sure, the Cubs pitching is took a big hit with Cade Horton out, but their offense is really good. And you telling me that offense couldn't just crush the Brewers for three games. So yeah, that's where I'm going. The Padres are just a little, like, they're just not as deep, especially on offense. They do have a really good bullpen, and their pitching could line up pretty well. So either way, it's going to be a difficult matchup for the Brewers, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
The Brewers are 45-36 on the road. And I say that because if the Cubs win, these games are going to be in front of hostile fans. I mean, maybe the Brewers finally figure out this magic formula to keeping Cubs fans out of the stadium and to keep it still a strongly partisan Brewers crowd. I don't think so. I think that's basically impossible. And so that is, I think, the thing that that's still the thing I think about. Like, the players don't care. The Cubs mean as much to these players as the Padres do, as just an opponent. They're just somebody on the schedule. They don't feel what fans feel, but fans, in my mind, are not going to love the idea of Cubs fans storming into American Family Field and ruining what is an opportunity to play, you know, as the top home field advantage in the division series. Now, I did put that out to readers this week at jsonline.com. I said, do you want to see the Cubs? Because as for everyone who thinks like me, like, why would you want fans overrunning the place? There's fans who are like, bring them on. We want to give Craig Counsell the L. Craig Counsell's name came up a lot from readers. A lot of people saying Craig Counsell's name. Many of them didn't have that second L on the end of his name, but that is neither here nor there. People want to beat the Cubs. In fact, 50-50, almost exactly, within one vote, people said, I think they favored no, but what does it matter? Like 50-50, no versus yes on the Cubs. So I don't know. I guess half the fans are interested in seeing Chicago, but that's still my primary thing. But this Brewers team, they'd still bat last. They were good against, hostile crowds. This would be nothing new for them. So I do think you could split hairs all day long. Yes, the Padres bullpen is good. Jason Adam is out, so that makes things a little harder, but they're still very good. Brewers, I thought, did okay against the Padres bullpen when they just faced them again. They just saw them a couple weeks ago. So not even a couple weeks ago, this week. So maybe you don't want to see the Padres in an opponent that you just saw, lost 4-6 against them. I truly don't know what the better course of action is. I do want to know a little bit about this roster and where you think the questions are. A lot of this stuff will be obvious, but they have a while. They have 5 days before this roster is not due until the start of the division series. They have all the data that they're going to be working with for the next 5 days as they try to decide who goes on this roster. And I think there are a couple interesting battles in quotes, but still a couple things we don't know. So what do you think what are the questions you have? What are the one or two spots you're like, I don't know who gets this spot when things line up on Saturday?
Let's start with the offense. It's the last spot on the roster. You can pretty much, they're going to go 14 and 12, 14 hitters. Almost certainly they'll go 14 and 12. That leaves you with, if you just count them up, that leaves you with one spot left. That's a little bit of a question mark. Seemed like it would be Rhys Hoskins for a while. I thought the guy would come back guns blazing and win the starter job back as Andrew Vaughn regresses. That didn't happen. Jake Bowers did that instead. Andrew Vaughn didn't really regress. So it's either Hoskins or I think Brandon Lockridge for that spot, or this is where the plot thickens a little. And I tried to weasel an answer on this out of Murph after the game. With Danny Jansen suddenly hitting the ball incredible and showing you what he's capable of, why you traded for him, is he a guy that you would like to pinch hit earlier in the game? Like, is there a spot for him? You could really get into the granular details of that. And I could see you going yes, I could see you going no. Like, you got Bowers for Ortiz, but what if it's a lefty? Well, then you might go to Collins in that spot. But what would you rather go to Jansen? And is it worth, then you'd have to roster Caro or maybe Siegler just so you have a backup catcher option for Contreras, right? who's still dealing a little bit with the effects of getting hit by the swing in St. Louis. That's why he was out of the lineup the last two games. They don't expect him to miss the playoffs or anything, but like they want to have the backup catcher. You don't want to get screwed in the playoffs without that option. So it could be Siegler, could it be Caro? But then like those guys aren't going to play unless something happens. But Lockridge, if you put Lockridge in that spot, he's going to pinch run. He's going to play. And at this point, it just seems maybe they'll surprise us and put Hoskins on in a kind of a Winker, a reprise of Jesse Winker. Nicer guy than Jesse Winker. At least the Milwaukee Brewers of last year would certainly tell you that.
Yes.
But he's 0 for 10. Like, he didn't get in the game again today. He's 0 for 10 since coming back from the IL. He came back from the IL like at the very not the very beginning, like this September 10th or something. He's been here for 3 weeks. They do not hit him. So it just seems like he has worked his way off to the point where, like, why are we going to give you at bats? We got to get these other guys ready. So that's where we're on the hitters. And then JR, the pitching staff, I think there's plenty of questions. Like, do you want Deal Hall or Robert Gasser? I don't know. I don't know what your preference is. Does Grant Anderson make it? Rob Zastrzyski's probably on as a lefty. Jacob Mizorowski? What the heck are we doing there? Chad Patrick doesn't seem like a question mark anymore. Tobias Myers seems to be on the outs at this point with the role that he's been in. Grant Anderson might be too. So it's those last couple of spots, and it's like, what do you want from them? And frankly, do you trust Jacob Mizorowski? And they seem to be still enticed by that proposition.
Yeah, obviously Mizorowski is a huge, huge question mark. And let me, before I get to that, let me ask this. So the Hoskins / Lockridge / Siegler conundrum hinges on them taking 14 position players and 12 pitchers, right? I mean, otherwise
you don't need the 13 pitchers.
Okay, so I was going to ask that because there are enough questions about the pitchers. Would they just take another pitcher?
They would not, because then you're losing Collins, and they don't want to lose Collins.
Understood. That makes some sense. Okay, so it would be 14-12 for sure. I think the pitching staff has a lot of, you know. Is Chad Patrick a lock? Like, I wouldn't say that. Now, he's looked great.
I think bullpen, he is, yes. Sure. Look, they lined up the whole A bullpen for Sunday's
game.
And
he was in it.
Nick
Mears become
not
their Shelby Miller.
Chad Patrick had not. a pocket, I think, at the bottom of the order in the seventh. They're like, this is you. And he pitched well. So,
yeah, I mean, it does come down to how big of a deal do they look? Are they looking at this last month? Because Brandon Lockridge wasn't here for the last month. So if they go with him, it's because they purely want that speed element, maybe an extra outfielder too, but they want that speed element rather than another power guy off the bench. Now, you know, Danny Jansen is kind of your de facto right-handed power guy off the bench if you don't take Hoskins. So I don't know if that's something they're necessarily comfortable with given the situation where they wouldn't have that third catcher. Rhys Hoskins, I'm honestly blown away at how little he's played and how he has struck out just about every time when he has. I think it was 7 of those 10 at-bats have ended in strikeouts. So he
6.
Really doesn't. Only 6. Okay, my bad.
Only 6. Only 6. Gotta give
credit. Yeah, I believe they were all consecutive too, I believe, or something close to that. I am, you know, like the only reason, like you said, that they would put him in there is because they just value veterans that much. We know that's what Pat Murphy does, that he really values veterans. He values experience. That's why Jose Quintana is almost certain to make this roster, you know, even though he hasn't really shown what and hasn't been healthy now, but hasn't really shown dominant stuff here. I can't believe that they would put Hoskins on after what you've seen from him, but they really value that experience. Which brings me back to Mizorowski. Doesn't have the playoff experience. And quite honestly, every time he comes to the game, I expect him to give up runs. Expect him to walk guys. I expect him to be erratic. If he gets a couple outs in a row, I think that's a success. That's not where you want to be. Not for him, not for the team. You know, the degree to which he is still special is what would keep him in the conversation here. But, you know, he did make a relief appearance on Saturday. It was not good. He walked 3 guys and 2 1/3, gave up some hits, gave up some runs. I can't look at that playoff roster and say in good conscience, if he's on it, that I would feel comfortable with him pitching at any point in the postseason. I just have not seen it from him. At the same time, he is interesting. So what do you think are they weighing there? They'd have to know how to use him.
They've got enough to cover a 5-game series without him pitching any high leverage. And so, like, do you just try to get him in a game at some point? Like, is he just the last guy that can cover 2-3 innings for you and then maybe use that as a springboard? I don't know. There was kind of a split feel. Like, it's kind of funny. We're all trying to read into all of Murph's comments, which is kind of how we landed on Lockridge, by the way. Like, they're, you know, going through all these possible scenarios and like, well, we don't want to get, you know, how are we going to score runs? We're not going to hit homers. So we got to get the guy to second. Like, if it's the 11th inning, we got to get the guy to second. We got to walk. How are we getting him to second? He didn't say Brandon Lockridge, but I am assuming Brandon Lockridge. Anyway,
yeah.
So we're all trying. So some people were like, I don't know. I thought his comments about, you know, Miz not carrying his water in that game, I thought that was like the death knell. I was like, I'm not getting that from them. I get like they have had every opportunity to say he's lost his spot and they refuse to do that. They have not done that. And you look at some of the other options, it's like, okay, Grant Anderson had he had a very serviceable year, pitched a lot for them, was great early in the middle parts of the year, but the guy's got like a 2 whip since early August, the beginning of August, something like that. DL Hall, like, he's pitched once in the last month. That's basically what it comes down to.
They cannot him.
And it wasn't, and it wasn't, and it was not a good outing. He gave up a homer to the first batter he faced.
So, his last outing was bad too, before he went on the injured list. Like, where's the track record for DL Hall?
Yeah. So I'm just somewhere in the land of like defaulting to Miz is still on the roster. And because of that, like, they could find a spot for him and maybe use that as a springboard to maybe get more out of him down the road. Because look, they're trying to win this whole thing, and having good Miz would certainly help that. And there's more upside to good Miz, I think, than you're getting like right now from Grant Anderson and some of those other guys. But that's what they have to weigh, and ultimately, like, you still feel better about what you're going to get as a baseline from Grant Anderson right now than you do Miz. And so I would love to be in just hear these conversations and how they ultimately settle on what they settle. But yeah, I've still got Miz. We've still got Miz on our roster, which I believe is our predictions going up today.
Okay. So check that out at jsonline.com. I'm hearing what you're saying, and I think I am siding on the belief that Miz should be on the roster. Because if Miz is pitching at the back of that bullpen, you know, not back of the bullpen, but like as the last man standing in the bullpen, the game has gone long. Maybe it's in extras. Maybe you're out of pitchers or getting low, or you need, you know, just a matchup thing. You would rather have, because at this point you're desperate. You've used up all the rest of your A bullpen. Do you want Grant Anderson coming out of the bullpen, or do you want Jacob Mizrowski coming out in that spot? You're probably in trouble either way. But Mizrowski, there's a chance that you get the strikeout, or that, you know, he blows a couple guys away.
And these games could go 15 innings.
That's right. There's no man on second base. There's no man on second base. You need guys who are capable of going multiple innings. That's right.
Which is where I go. I think we ended up putting Dale Hall in our prediction that we ran, but Gasser gives you the length. And that's not, with Quintana back, that's not a guy that has to make a start now. So where do you go with that? And these are all the things they're figuring out. Frankly, a lot of it sounds like they have it figured out, but like they're not going to be using this week to evaluate things. So, yep, roster stuff, always fun.
Yeah, I mean, so much pitching stuff. Trevor McGill pitched an inning, looked great on Sunday, back from this flexor strain. So one would think he's strongly in the mix there, at least as long as his arm holds up. And that was really encouraging. You mentioned DL Hall. He was back for his first appearance in forever since August. So a lot of moving parts. They cut ties with Eric Fetty, so he's officially out of the mix at this point. Carlos Rodriguez went back to, you know, he's optioned. I guess he doesn't go back to AAA because AAA is over. But a lot of moving parts. We'll be fascinated to know how that ends up. And it, you know, the pitching is interesting, but the offense, I think, it's still the thing that we need to talk about more. And that's, Is this offense good enough? It's a question that we've asked it multiple times throughout the course of the season. I think it is.
But now it's time. It's the point that we can actually talk about it. We have 162 games of evidence, of numbers, of data, of vibes, and the playoffs are in front of us.
They have shown that their offense is capable. I mean, it was good enough all season long. They won 97 games. Who are we to say otherwise? They came off this incredible August where they hit 45 homers. That was by far, by like 20, the most homers that they had hit in a month. Their previous high was literally 27, and that was April and March, and then they hit 45 in August. Well, the pendulum swung back real hard in September. Even with Danny Jansen's home run on Sunday, they hit 17 by far, by nine. No, actually by eight. That's the lowest of any month. They had been really consistent for the first 4 months, 27, 26, 26, 25 for the first 4 months of the season, which was not a good power amount, but it was still, you know, like you knew what you were getting from them. And then they blew up in August and fell back to earth big time in September. They're still getting on base at an okay clip, 331 for the month of September. You'll take that. OPS right at 700 though is pretty low. It's not the end of the world. They've been worse. May was worse, but we've gone back to the point, and I keep bringing this up, but you know, the numbers will show you that offense does go down in the playoffs. Makes sense. The pitchers are better. And even though their style will work, you know, wearing out pitchers is absolutely what you want. Even though I would argue that you're not going to see starters for full, you know, 5-6 innings in the postseason. So wearing down a starter maybe has less value than it did before, but long at bats, seeing guys multiple times, you know, or for longer than they want, more pitches. I mean, that's all very, very useful, and it works in the postseason. But home runs are a greater percentage of the offense because there's less offense, and the homers, you know, homers go down in the postseason, but not that much, not to the point that they, you know, decline in value. Like, you want guys to hit home runs, and the Brewers obviously have some guys who can hit home runs. But I look at this month and would be concerned that they've gone back into a place where you can't trust this offense to sustainably win games when the best pitchers are on the mound. Now they have a whole week off. Maybe they can heal whatever ails them. We know guys are banged up. We know William Contreras is banged up. Jackson Chourio, I think, was playing a little bit hurt here.
Sal was banged up. Sal has been banged up too. No doubt.
Of course. Per usual. I mean, somebody who plays that hard, you know it. So this week is going to serve them very well. I don't think you're going to find many people who are like, oh, that week is going to kill their momentum or whatever. What momentum? They won four games in the last 2 weeks. They look very tired. This is so perfect. Thank goodness they have this week. And maybe they come out the other side. There's not a lot of correlation between how you finish the season and how you do in the playoffs. We know that intellectually. But if we're talking about vibes, which is what we'd like to talk about, the offense hasn't looked good. Certainly not good enough that you think they can compete for a World Series here in the last couple weeks of the season. They're going to have to look a little different when they come on the other side of this break. Your thoughts, Kurt, on the offense, what we've seen, if this is a harbinger of doom, how they've played in September, or if it's just a small blip on the radar and the week off is going to heal what ails them.
So I'm going to start with just reading you where the Brewers finished on offense. They were only 22nd in home runs. I just had this up and I have to refresh it on Fangraphs. They were in slugging. But they're still 12th in slugging, so they had a little slug. But a lot of that was frankly, is the batting average, where they were really high, 258. They finished third in runs scored behind the Yankees and the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks were 6th in runs scored and didn't even really sniff didn't sniff like being a good team, essentially. A team got in with 83 wins. Good for the Reds. I'm happy for the Reds. I'm happy for Brent Suter. But I'll save it.
Dude, the Reds are going all the way to the NLCS. I don't know who they're going to face when they get there.
Probably Milwaukee. Are. Oh, I picked them over the Dodgers. And then the Brewers, I believe, were 6th. It's got to refresh. They're 9th in WRC+. That is a functional offense. This offense is capable of winning a World Series. However, is it good enough to win a World Series? Because like you said, their offense is predicated on doing a certain thing very well. And, you know, sometimes, like we saw in August, sometimes it can be predicated. It doesn't have to be. If Contreras and Yelich and Terang are all hitting home runs, whoop-de-doo. What else do you need? But that does, the odds of that being sequenced up here are low, especially for the duration of the playoffs. And frankly, like Pat Murphy's talked about it too, they know how they're going to have to win. And so I think there's just been time and time again. It's not even related to how, I don't care how the Brewers finished the season. What I do care about is that there were a lot of games down the stretch that were very identical to games we saw interspersed throughout the season and early in the season. And like, ultimately this Brewers offense, like we said, it is capable, but it also has a, I don't want to call it a glaring weakness, but a weakness that can be your downfall in October. Of course, every team's weakness can be their downfall in October, but this one specifically is one that we've seen it before with this team, with the Brewers. They don't hit enough home runs. They run into this and they run into that. And it's like, you just got to sequence so many things up and like have so many competitive at bats and et cetera and et cetera. And like, is the ball going to fall your way with the runner on second base or two guys on third and one out? Like, you're going to get the bloop hit to fall in. They just have to work a lot harder to generate what other teams don't have to work as hard at to generate. And so, yeah, that's the big question for sure.
So much of this, I feel like, connects to William Contreras. You know, we paid attention to Bryce Terang hitting 10 homers in the month of August, and rightfully so, because he's not a home run hitter. Well, William Contreras hit 9 homers in August. 9 homers, 6 doubles, 921 OPS, back to being a God-tier catcher after, you know, 4 months that I think he would say we're not up to his standards. It's been a rough year. It's been injury-riddled, and he hasn't been the guy that he was the last couple seasons. But in August, he was sensational. And then September happened. He has hit 0 homers in September. He's hit 3 doubles, 3 extra base hits in the entire month of September. He has driven in just 7 runs. That's the lowest of any month, 668 OPS for September. And he hasn't played in every, he's only played in 18 games. And this is a guy who famously fights tooth and nail to be in every single lineup. And if he's missing games, it's because he's really, really hurt. Even here at the end of the season, where it obviously made all the sense in the world to sit him, you know that he's feeling it. So this week, I feel like obviously huge for him to heal up. But like, if William Contreras is going good, there isn't a lot else that you need. I mean, of course there is, but he really is a difference maker when he is swinging the bat well. So man, I feel like it's just with him now. It helps having Danny Jansen if Danny Jansen is playing like he has been the last couple of weeks, you're going to have production at catcher one way or another. And I think that's a big, big asset for the Brewers. But you know, William Contreras had a weird year. It's been really strange that he just like woke up in August and was like, you know, they bring over Danny Jansen and it's like a fire was lit or something, or the injury healed and he was just ready to rock. And then it's been whatever in September again. So, man, I feel like that's a big thing. Yelich too, but primarily William.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see where he's at. Like I said, I think it was two pods ago, maybe last pod. I have no idea. I just don't know what to expect ever with him because it ebbs and flows, and he can be incredibly injured and still hit the ball harder than everyone else on this team. Just,
yeah,
some of his best power this year was when he's still dealing with the finger. So that is the big X factor, I think, too, for the offense. Jackson Chirio has started to swing it better as well. And you absolutely need something from those guys.
Yeah. A couple more thoughts. I feel like we lost Isaac Collins somewhere along the way. He was our Rookie of the Year candidate. He was a great.
We lost his defense. That's for sure.
You know, he had a nice hit on Sunday, but like offensively, it hasn't been there to the same degree, and that's fine. But the defense is the puzzle. You know, like he had just a all-time terrible outfield defensive day this weekend, and that's fine. One off is fine, but he's gone from being one of the best corner defenders in baseball to easily below, you know, losing runs, you know, according to DRS. Like he's been below, you know, certainly below average as a defender. What's going on there? What happened? Did something catch up to Isaac Collins? Is this a regression? What's going on?
It's kind of bizarre and a reminder that sometimes defense does come and go. Like you can play really good defense and not be an elite defender. And I think it's sometimes hard to not make that rush to that judgment. Like, oh, Joey Ortiz through 3 months looks like a great defender. You know, he's playing great defense. He's got to be an elite defender. Well, in that case, we were right. and also that was like the scouting report on him coming up. So I guess maybe not the best example, but Isaac Collins is definitely going to be an example of that going forward where, look, early on his initial breaks, his initial jumps, his initial reads were great. But then the rest of it, still, like, there was still some murkiness going back on balls, and the routes weren't always great. And so suddenly it all starts to crumble a bit, and you see where he's at now. I would be curious if the defense had been good this month, if they would still want to start him in the postseason. But it seems like that's Blake Perkins' job now. As long as he hits a little bit, the Milwaukee Brewers, you'll be shocked by this, are going to prioritize defense as they do. And so instead, like Chirio at center, Collins on left, suddenly opens a lot more holes on a Freddy Peralta, Quinn Priester start than Blake Perkins in center and Jackson Chirio in left, where he's much better, although he did rob a home run in center field, his second one of the year this year, or second of the year. He did it this week in San Diego. So I think that's where we're at with what happened to Isaac Collins. Still, I mean, like, let's be very clear. Still an out-of-nowhere, very impressive rookie season.
Yeah, he's going to get Rookie of the Year votes somewhere along the way there for sure. But yeah, an interesting sort of development for him as the season has gone along. And you mentioned that Chirio catch, another big win for them. Like this was still when they're chasing Philadelphia for the number one seed. It was not obvious when they won that game in San Diego that they were going to get the number one seed. I think Philadelphia might've lost that day. I don't remember for sure, but that was a big win. The one win that they got in San Diego. And then even into the final day of the season or the second to last day of the season, didn't know if the Brewers would get the number one seed. They did because Philadelphia lost. Now, in that game on Saturday night when the Brewers were losing to the Reds, Joey Ortiz came up with the bases loaded yet again. The man is literally 20% of the Brewers' bases loaded opportunities with Joey Ortiz at the plate. He has not done well. The Brewers are quite elite at hitting with bases loaded. That seems like something that would fit their system. They're quite good at it. If Joey Ortiz were not taking these at bats, they'd be even better because he has struggled in them. It has been a struggle for him offensively for sure. Defensively, amazing. He was amazing on Saturday night, made play after play after play. So you know you get that much, and I am not advocating that they take him out of the lineup. They cannot. He is important to them. But I was really surprised they didn't pinch hit for him in that spot. I mean, Rhys Hoskins, is that not what he's here for? And maybe that says more about Hoskins than Ortiz, but
yeah, no, he's not here for that. Clearly, he's not.
Apparently not.
Apparently we not. Thought he would be, but the actuality is he's not here for that. So what's he here for? And we have our answer.
I feel like in the postseason, we're going to see Ortiz just not even make it into seventh innings, depending on the circumstances. If they're winning, he'll make it because they need the defense. They need that steady shortstop. I think that makes Andrew Monasterio a much bigger part of the postseason equation than we might even be thinking about right now. But I also don't know for sure if I'm clear when they're going to pull Joey Ortiz out of an at-bat. Maybe the answer is just like, maybe this is the Sal Frelick of this year. Joey Ortiz is going to get a hit with the bases loaded in the postseason. Maybe that's the prediction I need to make What do you think? What do you think? Because it was going to be Danny Jansen hits a homer, but now that's not even like far-fetched. That's like, that makes
sense. I thought you were an insane man last year, and I would say you're an insane man again. So
I am not full-fledged predicting this. It requires a lot of circumstances to go right, but I mean, why not? Right? Why not?
You have I guess to feel I'm just, it. I'm not gonna count that because you gotta feel it in your bosom.
I do have a take. I had a vision, but I'm gonna share it. I'm gonna share it a little
can
bit.
Can you take Kurt Blanche this week?
Well, if you don't want it to, sure. I'll give my vision.
No, I got some heat.
Okay. I love heat. I don't have a good question about Joey Ortiz, I don't think, other than
what's the earliest you would pinch hit for him? I think that's a question for me.
I think that's a good question for Murph. I don't think Murph has a steadfast. I mean, I always thought it was like seventh inning, and if they're down, that's it.
No, they value the defense so much.
I know they do. They should.
That it's great. Not going to be that early. But oh man, you're telling me. Backs one game three 1-1 series. Fourth inning, tie game, bases loaded, one out, right-hander on the mound. You're telling me you're not going to Jake Bowers there?
Jake Bowers, come on down. Did he get hurt though on Sunday? Is he okay?
He did. The concerning thing was it was his left arm came off the bat, and it's his left shoulder, I believe. I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
That has been bugging him. And when I talked to him, his whole revelation was like, well, actually, I figured out where I was overcompensating with my swing for like the last 4 years with my left shoulder.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
And so theoretically, that's the green light that he hit. So the left shoulder being bad again would not be good. But then again, they've got a week off. They have a week off. If anyone, I swear. If anyone asks me this week about the benefit or like the downside or mentions any negative connotation with the Brewers not playing this week, I'm just going to lose it. I'm not going to be able to. I'm like, I that's irrationality that I just don't have the brain capacity for.
Yeah.
You have seen these guys sputter in this round three times since 2019.
You want to go through that again?
How would you feel right now if they were going to San Diego? There would be bricks. There would be bricks. The bricks would be involved. We're not masons. We're not laying bricks. This is a cement house.
This is not the
nothing can break it down because they're not playing. It's a cement house. The walls have good intestinal fortitude. Nothing can break it. I've lost it.
You've definitely made it worse.
I'm getting worked up about it, and no one has even presented this.
What is the name of the building in left? Is it the Metal Supply Company building in the left field?
Yes, at the Petco Western Park? Metal Supply. Yes.
All those bricks. Super.
It would be laid by you, the fan.
Well, yeah. I mean, you just have to look at this team. Just look at them. They need the break. They need to figure things out.
You wanted to come down to a three-game series so that they can be rolling on all cylinders if Pete Alonso doesn't hit a three-run homer in the ninth inning. Okay. All right. I might even be strawmanning here. Like, I don't even know if people actually believe that, but I think there are some that are like have some hesitancy or like a little bit of worry about the week off. I think it's like
developed this, maybe it's not just baseball, but there's this weird connotation in sports of like, whoa, what are you going to do? You got a week off. Are you going to be rusty? The Dodgers just won a World Series, man.
They did.
They had a week off.
And and the year before, everybody who had a week off did not make it into the next round, or three of the four did not. And none of them made the World Series.
When the Astros won, did they have, they probably had the bye, right?
No.
No, they didn't?
Well, hold on.
They played wild card in 22.
In 2022, they did have a bye. So literally, there's been 3 years of this. Literally half the teams that have made it through to the CS round had a bye. Literally 50%. So there have been some incredible teams like the Dodgers with 111 wins or whatever it was that did not make it through. But there's 3 years of data. We don't have any, like, also, it doesn't even matter about the data. It matters about this Brewers team. And they were not playing well, and they are banged up, and they need 5 days. And I think, like you said, I think most people realize that. There's always going to be somebody who feels like the format failed them somehow if it doesn't go well. I think the real exciting part is going to be when the Reds beat the Dodgers, and then the Brewers have to face either the Cubs or the Padres. It's like, why couldn't they reseed it? We'll revisit that again. Why don't they reseed it and let them play, you know, the least of the seeds, which is true. They should.
That they should, like...
Agreed.
I understand there's a little bit of, I don't know, there's some travel logistics for that. But come on, you're a big league club. You can figure that out. And scouting logistics, whatever. Like you got guys to figure all this stuff out. Come on now.
There will be so many bricks when game four at Wrigley Field. Enough bricks to build a wall, to build an outfield wall.
Would you put ivy over the wall?
Not this particular wall, I don't think. I don't know.
That's another thing that we haven't talked about nearly enough on this show. They got a brick wall out there.
Like, they have been able to get away for a century with wall that can kill people.
I have been out there, like, there's ivy, but like, A, it's a plant. B, it ain't that much. You're still running into a brick wall.
Yeah.
Ian Broxton will tell you about that. R.I.P.
Oh, for sure.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. They built a hill in center field in Houston, and they were like, that's dangerous. Let's not do that. And so they got rid of it. The wall, though, it persists. It stays.
Did anyone ever get, like, hurt on the hill, though?
I don't know. I saw guys fall down. Michael Bourne made some great catches out there. But no, yeah, I think it was just like this. Yeah, a great catch by Carlos Gomez. No, I think they just looked at it and they were like, this is a terrible idea for the safety of our players.
But it was a great, I know I might be contradicting myself here, and that's fine. It was a great idea.
Sure.
The fact that Tal Hill is gone is a disgrace to our sport. Okay. Players get injured all over. Darren Ruff got injured on a tarp.
Yes, that's true. And litigious.
I've gone into this, but the tarp was like there, legitimate. It was metal. He ran into metal. It shredded his knee. I don't know how that case is going. I don't know if he's actually getting money from suing them.
I hope he gets something out of it for sure.
He should. Anyway,
we lost
the plot a long time ago.
I don't think you can advocate for Tal's Hill. You cannot advocate for Tal's Hill and be like, well, the Wrigley Field wall has to go. You cannot. I'm sorry. I won't allow it. Let's get into some of the more granular details from the week. We have to move on. I need to go to bed. We're getting punchy. We are getting punchy. Let's move into some of the more granular details from the week. Here it is. Three up, three down. The Brewers' slogan for October is magic, magic brew. Kurt, what are your thoughts on magic brew? How do you feel about it?
This actually would have been a great Kurt Blanche. I could have just been, angry about things. We got to, like, I don't need teams to have playoff slogans. I don't need it. Ever since, like, we peaked in 2010, maybe 11. With the Bucks and Fear the Deer, we peaked.
Yes,
we had it. Peaked. And I guess, like, also locally, another pinnacle was 2021, where it wasn't even a good slogan. History in the making, I think, was the Bucks slogan, and then they won the title. And so, that works out. The Rangers in 23 was like, go and take it, and then now, like, they've still got signs in their ballpark that say like went and took it or something. So like, oh, congrats. It's still not a good slogan, but like history shines upon it. I just don't need them for all these teams. Just like my crew, my October, just recycle that every season, man.
Yeah.
Just recycle that one every season. What was it last year? Oh, Undaunted. Whoops.
Well, they were quite daunted.
I don't need it. I just don't need it. I don't need it.
Right. I agree with you there. I mean, this is like creating a campaign slogan. It has to be so broad. It has to reach everybody. You can't be clever with it because people inevitably, a good percentage will not get the joke. You know, it's why we're still talking about the King Von t-shirt, because we're not quite sure if they were paying homage to a very problematic rapper from Chicago or what the deal was. It's just, and they try to find a new one every year. And when you go to the playoffs 7 out of 8 years, that's a lot of slogans. So I agree with you. They should recycle what they've got, or maybe just not go with one, but the merch, Kurt, think of the merch. They have to sell the merch. So, you know, 2025 postseason qualifier or something just doesn't, doesn't work. I guess. I don't know. Magic Brew.
One of my great regrets of the last 5 years is not going in on merch.
Oh, you mean like
I came, like Graham merch. I had it in my shopping cart as a bit. Probably, I mean, the Badgers lost a lot, so I would do it after losses. And I think of like, this would be a good gag gift for like my brother or Andy Schaff or someone.
Oh, jeez, yes.
And then unfortunately, I never bought it. And then one day, like 2 years ago, I was like, I'm doing it. I got my, I mean, the shirts were like $40, but I was like, I'm doing it. I've seen enough. We just lost to Minnesota again. And then there was nothing. So sadness consumes me. Sadness
is $40. Is it like buy one get a Remedy for free with a Graham Mertz t-shirt?
Oh man,
that Remedy would have been a bargain.
You could get a Remedy on eBay. That's another gambit that I've been toying with.
So expensive.
Yeah,
I don't need to feed a family and cannot afford Remedy.
It is literally the scene from Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave. Like I am not eating, not spending my money on food so I can buy this shirt with weird designs. Anyway,
that's right. What's your number one?
I don't even like, I feel like we got to a lot of things. Yelich had lead off a bunch this week.
Oh, that was interesting. What's up with that?
I don't love it.
Okay.
I just don't hate it, but it's kind of a bizarre thing to pull out this late in the season. Murphy said it was his idea and he's toying with it for the playoffs, and he didn't shoot down that he would use it in the playoffs. I don't think he will. But
no, he spent the whole last 2 weeks doing it, or week, I guess.
It was like the last 5 games, which is what made it bizarre. I don't know if it was like a gambit to try to get Yelich for more at bats to get 30 homers, which he came 5 feet away from with a flyout in the game Sunday in his last at bat of the regular season. But I still don't think they do it. But maybe Murph's just like, this is his new thing.
I mean, the lineup Sunday felt like it worked. They only scored 4 runs, but it felt like it was clicking a little bit. I don't know. My number two, Nick Mears kind of escaped nicely on Wednesday in a game. Are we sure Nick Mears is on the playoff roster?
Yes, we are sure. Is he in leverage? Okay. No, we are not sure.
No, it's been a little bit of a struggle. You know, he was banged up. He hasn't really returned to form, I would say, from maybe where you see him at his best. He got 2 quick outs on Wednesday and then kind of like, you know, allowed some base runners. And again, he worked out of it. He made it work, but it's been a little bit rough. And that's a guy that, you know, they really like between him and Shelby Miller. And this is why Chad Patrick is actually kind of important. Like if you can use him as that kind of leverage, right. They don't have that guy. You know, they had Abner and Trevor at the back of the bullpen, and then they had, you know, options after that, but like they kind of need another right-handed hammer. You know, they got lots of lefties. Ashby, Gasser, Zastrzyzny, maybe Deal Hall. Like they got those guys. So you need to buy. Ooh, Ashby, by the way, on Sunday. Wow. He looks so good. He, for as many innings as he's thrown, for as many appearances as he's made, multi-inning appearances, he does not look bad at all. He really powered through, I think, kind of a difficult season and has looked fantastic. So good for him. That's it.
Good for me.
Because you have all of the Aaron Ashby stock. You have it.
No, I don't have all of it. Grant Bills also has some.
Shouts to Grant Bills. Hope he's listening.
Shout out Grant. Shout out Grant Bills. Bobbleheads are your birthright. I haven't sold it yet. I haven't sold it yet. I'm coming back. If they so much as to suggest he might start next year, you are not ready for the fury I'm about to unleash with my takes.
I think
you could get you can get a Remedy shirt. There's 77 of these things listed on eBay. So apparently they sold at least 77. They probably sold like 70. They probably sold about like 79. Like almost all of these are probably listed. Like just about every Remedy that was ever sold is probably on eBay right now. There's no
way. Are they $100 or less?
Yes. Though there's it's a very wide range. I don't know how these are just, I mean, it's eBay, so you set your own price, I guess. But you can go anywhere from $40 to there's $25. Looks like an adult size. This one, it's vintage. Affliction vintage. It's $130. Remedy T-shirt. Men's. I don't know. These sizes are weird. $220.
Love a good novelty. Love a good novelty. I guarantee you, Ryan Braun did not make T-shirts for people built like me. I'm going to guess there's nothing in my size. That's just my guess.
There are so many shirts on eBay here that there's no way that this had to be a bigger thing than just Ryan Braun, right? I'm just misremembering this. Like, there's so many shirts and designs. They printed so many shirts. Amazing. None of these are Remedy. The same.
We did not know your game, Remedy.
I mean, maybe they really hit for like a year. I mean, like, there's a full-on collection of these on eBay. So
amazing. I will consult that, but I'm not going to do it tonight because I am so tired. And
do you think
the Packers somehow tied the Cowboys?
We were not supposed to go this long because we watched a bad football game. Do you think I could expense it?
Yes, absolutely. It's for science and content.
Probably. I'll do a story on, or I'll put it on a podcast. Where are we?
Do you have a number two?
Jackson,
I could finish.
Jackson Churio 2020 against the youngest player to do it twice. He was like, you could tell he was going to run whenever he got on base, but he ended up finishing the year, I think, with 20. Did he finish the year 21-21 again?
Did he get another steal? I didn't see that.
I think he might have done. I could, you know, the internet, I could look this up. I think he was like 21-23 to finish last year. And then, yeah, hit another homer later in the week. So, like, the injury impacted him, no doubt. And he had a slow September, probably partially because of it. But it just felt like he didn't turn the corner and have this huge sophomore season. But he was still pretty good and on pace to have a really good season before the hamstring exploded in his face.
Indeed, 21-21 with that last stolen base. He was on 18 for a while, and then he just, like you said, rattled off three of them here in the last weekend. I feel like that 21st homer was big. He needed it. I mean, he was slumping really, really badly. Gets the homer. He had an awesome swing on Sunday. It was just a single. Or maybe, no, that was a double in advance of Andrew Vaughn with another nice swing in the same inning. Like, they looked really a lot more confident on Sunday than they have looked offensively, and Churio was a big part of that. So, you know, he got into a part of, I think, where he wasn't seeing results and he was still swinging at everything. And it just, like, coming off the hamstring, he just wasn't right. So getting that kind of at the end of the year, I think, was really good. My third and final, Pat Murphy flipping pancakes. They did a pancake breakfast at the stadium, sort of a warm up for the postseason. They did that on Friday, and a lot of people showed up. Thousands of people showed up. Hannah Kirby, our colleague, was out there, posted some video online and wrote about it. Some takeaways, and Pat Murphy flipping pancakes behind his back, or no look, I should say, not really behind his back, but no look. Very, very good. Excellent accuracy at flipping pancakes from the griddle into the tray. Impressive stuff. Certainly one of the storylines of the year is Pat Murphy, because he's probably going to win manager of the year for a second time. He apparently carries food around in his back pockets. That became a storyline right around the time they won 14 games in a row. Love that this is somehow the pancake crew. It's not like an official title there, but just they're associated with pancakes. And I loved it. I love seeing him out there that early in the morning, and the number of people that showed up, they still got juice here. Milwaukee finished 12th in attendance again. It was a downward trend and it reversed halfway through the season. They got back up into the top 12. Very impressive stuff. The juice is here for Milwaukee Brewers baseball. You could tell on Friday morning.
All right, I'll wrap it up. Bruce Zimmerman.
Definitely
What are you? I don't know. What's so funny about that?
I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm so tired.
I just wanted to remember him. We are going to look back at this. Now you're making me laugh. We're going to look back at this and fond memories of the time Bruce Zimmerman pitched six innings in a start for the 97 win Brewers. I did your Sporkle. You did a Sporkle of name all the Brewers, and I got all of them from this year, but like three of them. And
yeah,
I was pretty proud of myself. I got all the hard ones. I missed Nestor Cortez and like two other very easy ones. I don't even remember who they were.
But like Drew ever Avins, expects Drew Avins. Yeah.
You know, Drew Avins I got. Obviously Bruce Zimmerman I got. Stuart Broa. I could never forget Stuart Broa.
Those two games, how momentous. Those were the two best games of the year, Kurt. Those are the two games in Cincinnati. They rally from 8-1 down. Andrew Monasterio hits the homer. Stuart Broa is there for those games. Never forgets.
I got to put this out there. I was the only person in the Milwaukee media to ever interview Stuart Broa. We did a nice one-on-one the first day he showed up. So therefore, I have the claim to the Stuart Broa game jersey. If any of you see it out in the wild, mine. Buy it. I'll Venmo you. I tip.
Bruce Zimmerman is interesting. And first of all, he got to celebrate the clinch. He showed up for the clinch night, which was kind of wild. As he said himself, like, there are guys still in AAA who did a lot more than I did this season for this team. So that was cool that he got to be here. He's a good soldier, signed his organizational depth. He didn't pitch like it wasn't lights out at AAA by any stretch of the imagination. He throws 90 miles an hour, left-hander. But, you know, he did his job, and he did his job in this game. He was asked to, go six innings, and he did. Yeah, he gave up six runs. Not great, but he did what he was asked. It was this weird situation roster-wise where they had called him up on a Saturday. I think is kind of a favor. Like, favor makes it, as a reward for what he – rightfully, he deserved a shot. He deserved like one start. I think that's probably fair and just. But they called him up as length, and they weren't even necessarily going to pitch him. But then the next day, Brandon Woodruff gets hurt, and they're expecting to activate Robert Gasser. So like, Bruce Zimmerman is here because they added him to the 40-man, knowing that they can give his 40-man spot away to Robert Gasser, who must be added from the 60-man injured list. They need a 40-man spot, so they get him for length. They bid adieu to Yoel Piamps. And they get the length thinking he's going to be here for one day. Well, then Brandon Woodruff gets hurt. So that's the spot that Robert Gasser is now able to take on the 26-man roster. And I feel like I'm wrong about this. I think Robert Gasser was already back on the 40-man roster. So I think I'm mixing this up. But somehow there was just a situation where they suddenly needed to keep him. It wasn't obvious that they could just add somebody else to take his place. So he ends up with a start that I just don't think he would have had otherwise. And, it didn't go great, but like, whatever. He did his job, which was to get through six innings. They needed the rest.
Get your bag, King.
Yeah, get your bag. Why not? I don't know why I'm laughing so much about it. Incredible. Bruce Zimmerman, where he will always be remembered. I think I'm going to put that Brewer's Sporkle into a file at jsonline.com. So if you want to play, that should be up sometime on Monday morning. If you want to try to name everybody on the 2025 Brewers, do not forget Stuart Broa. Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
I did the 2016 Brewers Sporkle, and I did better at it than the team I'm literally covering right now.
Incredible.
That's normally when they still do like seek help.
What didn't we talk about? Well, like you said, we kind of got all of it. I think the fans coming out, mentioned the attendance, pretty impressive final weekend, I would say. The Mets choking, hilarious. I mean, I posted this, but just being in that same situation where a team waiting at American Family Field for the last wildcard spot hinging on whether or not the Mets lose to the Marlins. That's exactly the scenario the Brewers were in 2008. It also happened to the Mets in 2007. Not that the Brewers were involved, but losing to the Marlins on the last day of the season cost them a chance to be in the playoffs. They have Juan Soto. They spent a gajillion dollars. David Stearns, the general manager, spent a gajillion. Well, he didn't spend it, but all that money for a roster that did not make the playoffs. Incredible. They were the best team in baseball through like the middle part of the season. Just incredible that it did not come together for them. Real, real tough stuff. Houston also losing their long streak of playoff appearances with their collapse was not noticed at all. The Detroit Tigers collapsed, and that was noticeable. And Toronto really struggled at the end and almost lost the East, but held it together, winning, you know, sweeping the final series to get into to get that first round bye and win the American League East. But man, Houston, five out of the last six, they lost what looked like a surefire playoff spot as well. Okay. All right, let's go back in time a little bit. Here it is, my weekly segment of Brewers History. It is Remember When. Kurt, the last day of the season, it's kind of fun what Major League Baseball does. It's when they line up all the games at the same time, and that creates maximum drama. We had that on Sunday. You had a bunch of games that mattered, 4-6, depending on whether or not you think the Tigers and Guardians mattered. I think they kind of did. I don't know if they were really playing it that way necessarily, but in any event, you had events affecting each other. Obviously, the Reds needed to, the Reds needed the Mets to lose once they lost to the Brewers. But I want to go back to kind of, I feel like the genesis of this idea, I really think, came from the year 2011, one of the craziest final days in baseball history. And it involved the Brewers, but they were really more of a subplot, I think, to what happened on this day. And I know a lot of people remember it. Just an insane volume of things going a certain way. You had Baltimore winning in a walk-off over the Boston Red Sox. Robert Andino, of all people, hitting a walk-off single right in front of Carl Crawford. That bumped Boston from the playoffs. It was a sort of calamitous fall for them. They got eliminated. Terry Francona, who, of course, is the manager of the Reds now, he was manager of the Red Sox. He ends up resigning before the next season. It was a huge loss for them. Atlanta, they were up so big. They were, on September 1st, they were 7.5 games ahead of St. Louis for the wild card, and they end up missing the playoffs entirely. They fall on the last day of the season as well to the Phillies. That gets the Cardinals in. So they had a massive, massive fall from grace. So all of that was going on kind of at the same time. And then, of course, I think the thing people really remember is Tampa Bay winning, Evan Longoria hitting a walk-off home run against the Yankees, just kind of that left field corner, that little inlet in the left field corner of Tropicana Field. And that ends up getting the Rays into the playoffs in a win over the Yankees. So where did it impact the Brewers? Is interesting because it really kind of, I think, that for the Brewers, it was all about the night before. If people remember this, I think some people will. The Arizona Diamondbacks are the team that was kind of competing with home field advantage for home field advantage with the Brewers. The Brewers knew they were going to the playoffs, but Arizona was right there, a game back. And we were right on the precipice on the second to last day of the season, late into the night, of Arizona losing and getting eliminated from catching the Brewers. So they went down 6-1 in the 10th inning to the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're at home. I don't remember if that's Chase Field, Bank One Ballpark, what we called it then, but they're at home and they're down 5 runs suddenly in the 10th, and Blake Hawksworth comes in and gets the first 2 outs for the Dodgers. So there's 2 outs, nobody on, and they're down 5 runs are the Diamondbacks, knowing that if they lose, they are automatically going to be going to Milwaukee. They'll be the 3 seed. Milwaukee will be the 2 seed. Everything will be settled before the final game of the season. But I'm talking about it, so you know that it didn't end there. Justin Upton, he was due up, but unfortunately he had left the game. I think a ball had hit him in the head in the outfield, and he had to leave the game after that. So instead of him, it's Cole Gillespie who comes in Justin Upton's place to the plate. Cole Gillespie, a former Brewers draft pick. He's down 2-2 to Hawksworth. He ends up grounding to first base. Hawksworth doesn't cover the bag. That's an infield single. So then the next guy singles. Next guy walks. John McDonald, remember some guy's moment, pinch hitter. He hits a grounder that Aaron Miles muffs at second base. That allows a run to score. They take Hawksworth out. They bring in Javi Guerra, not the Javi Guerra that played for the Brewers. This is a different Javi Guerra. They bring him in, and it ends up being a disaster. He issues a bases loaded walk to Aaron Hill, another Brewers adjacent. Well, not Brewers adjacent. He was a Brewer eventually. That brought the go-ahead run to the plate and made it 6-3. Ryan Roberts hits the first pitch he sees. Ryan Roberts over the left field fence. He pumps his fist horizontally the way his manager at the time is Kirk Gibson. That's the way Kirk Gibson did it when he homered against Dennis Eckersley in game one of the 1988 World Series. And Gibson actually was manager of the year that year. So it was kind of a big season for him. He was all injured when in 1981. Everyone kind of remembers that story. So that's when Jack Buck delivers the famous line, "I don't believe what I just saw." in this case, Darren Sutton, former Brewers broadcaster, is on the call. And he says, are you watching Milwaukee? Like, they're fully aware that they're competing with the Brewers here, and they are desperate to win this game. So Darren Sutton, now the Diamondbacks announcer, delivers that line. And I remember thinking, man, that's cold. The Brewers ended up, because of this, having to start Zach Greinke on the final day of the season. They needed Greinke to ensure. They were going all in for that home field advantage. They needed him to start to ensure. The Brewers were playing the Pirates at the time. And Greinke does start the next night. That's the last game of the season. He wins. The Brewers win. Actually, Arizona loses. Arizona needed both things to go in reverse. They needed to win, need the Brewers to lose, to bypass Milwaukee for the 2 seed. That didn't happen. So the Brewers still get the 2 seed. None of that ended up mattering. They ended up, of course, hosting the Diamondbacks in the NLDS. You probably remember what happened there. Niger Morgan with the walk-off single in extra innings of Game 5. Tremendous, tremendous series. And it ended up working out. But this night, I know a lot of people remember a lot of the details from the 2011 finale. And the Brewers did have a small part in it. I believe 8 of the 16 games carried some meaning on the final day of the season. Truly wild stuff. So that was the Brewers' small part in it. We saw that a little bit again on Sunday. We see that kind of every year. There's always some race. And even this year, when we thought the races were going to be pretty much locked up for the most part by the middle of September, it did not turn out that way. You had the Yankees battling with the Blue Jays for supremacy in the AL East. Of course, the Tigers, Guardians battling for a central title. And then the Mets, Reds looking for that last playoff spot in the National League. It was a fun day. All right, there it is. Now we go close this down the way we always do. And that is Kurt with your take of the week. Take us away, Kurt Blom.
Used to have shame in this sport.
I never did.
83 wins gets you into the playoffs now?
That is a real tough number.
Maybe my beef is with baseball not being the English Premier League right now. Maybe that's really what I'm getting at here. And like, there's no other sport like this. And ultimately, the playoffs are folly. Maybe that's what I'm saying. But the 6th wild card team, and I know they've gone on some runs in the playoffs, and the Reds probably will too. And I want them to do it. I think that would be great television. And there's a lot of good people over in Cincinnati that I know that I would be happy for them to get that experience. But they won. I just can't shake it. They got in the playoffs as the 6th best team in the National League, and they won 83 games. The format's the format. I'm not knocking the Reds. I am absolutely not knocking the Reds. They did all they could down the stretch. They got hot. They swept the Cubs. They took 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee. They earned their right to the dance. They earned their right to party. But it has just felt like more often than not, since we have expanded the playoffs to 6 teams, that last team that gets in, and again, I know the Diamondbacks made the World Series. I know the Phillies were last team in, right? I know they made the World Series. That team was actually good, though. They won like 87, 88 games. That's respectable. It just hasn't been like a very good team. Can I say that? Is that okay to say? Oh, the Mets went on a run. The Mets went on a run last year too. I don't remember how many games that they won though. But I just feel like 6 teams is too many. We're not going to go back now. If anything, we're just going to go the other way. 6 is certainly, but 8 would be ridiculous. And I hope to God we never go there. But felt like 5 was the happy medium. And sure, the Cardinals ultimately won a World Series with 83 wins, but they at least won their division. Something about it sits weird with me, JR. Like the Reds, and again, the Reds should be having this party. They should be celebrating. But I'm sitting there going, and like almost every other year, not even baseball history, like when we had just had the one team from each league make it, in the playoff era, every other year, you guys are finishing like 4, 5, 6 games back. That's not a playoff team. They're just in the playoffs now because the system, I hope they do good. I hope they beat the Dodgers. But man, it doesn't sit right with me. It does not sit right with me that because you have 6 teams, you're going to get years where an 82 or an 83 or the Diamondbacks 184 games are going to get in the playoffs. I don't know.
In 2023, the Diamondbacks were actually one of 2 84-win teams that made the field. The Miami Marlins, as the 5th seed, made it with 84 wins as well.
Have some shame, National League. Goodness gracious. Only four teams won more than 84 games.
That's correct. Last year, at least, it was up to 86, but there were two 86 win teams in the American League. So 83 is the low bar since the start of the current playoff format. I agree. That's not enough wins. That's just a couple games over 500. I don't think Cincinnati has ever shown at any point this season that they're anything more than a just slightly above 500 team. If not a couple breaks, it's slightly below 500 team, you know, like that's the way it is. And that said, they got Hunter Green and Andrew Abbott. Nick Lodolo did not look good on Sunday, but he had looked amazing in his previous outing. I don't know since he pitched Sunday when they would use him exactly, but like that pitching staff can make things happen. They can shove a little bit and win some games. I think they have a chance to upset the Dodgers. I really, really do. But yeah, 83 wins is kind of weak, pretty weak. Kurt, would you like to know what came to me in a vision?
I need it.
You need it.
This was the greatest moment of this podcast history. So last year. So I need it.
Last year, as everyone recalls, of course, I predicted that Sal Frelick would hit a home run. When he had two home runs all season, they came on back-to-back days in May, and then he did it. He hit a home run. It was amazing. And in fact, haven't teased it yet, but I got a brief interview with Sal Frelick right after this. We talked about his home run last year. I did not tell him, by the way, I predicted it. Everyone says that. Oh, I called it. No, I wasn't gonna do that, but did talk to him a little bit about playoffs. Even the Packers come up, which is unfortunate at the current moment in time, but whatever. So that's coming up. But Kurt, I was on the elliptical and it hit me. It dawned on me. I knew I saw it. The television show Lost is something that's very near and dear to my heart. I love it. It's been gone for many, many years. I don't know if you ever even saw an episode of Lost. It's a little before your time, but amazing ABC show. And one of the central tenets of that is man of science versus man of fate. That's actually the name, I think, of the first episode of the second season. You've got two characters that are set up this way. Terry O'Quinn's character is the man of faith, and Matthew Shepard's character. Matthew Shepard is the, yeah, I'm so tired. I'm drawing a blank. That's the actor or the character. It's the actor. Anyway, he's the man of science. He's the doctor. And I've always felt that the struggle between man of science and man of faith, because this is the time of year for faith. You can look at all the reasons why the Brewers are good or not good, and you can look at all the reasons why any of these teams are good or not good. And the fact of the matter is, when you get to the postseason, you do have to surrender some of that. Science matters a little bit here, but also you just have to surrender to the random, because that's where we are in the season. And Kurt, I am, having looked at the science, I don't think this team is good enough to go to the World Series. I've said that to you. You know, I don't know if you'd even say that I think that they're going to get out of the division series in the conversations I've had with you. But on the elliptical, Kurt, it hit me. This team is going to the World Series. It's happening. It's I think they're going to play Seattle. I think it's going to be Seattle, the great 1969 Seattle Pilots. That's going to get all unearthed. It's going to be amazing content. But the Brewers, it's time to believe. They're going to the World Series. It's happening. It is happening. I don't know if they're going to win. I don't know if they're going to win. I don't think they will. I don't know. But they're going. I've seen it. It's happening.
I can't believe this is coming from you.
I know. That's why I was chosen as a vessel for this message, for this vision.
You have surrendered.
The faith side is finally taking over. The Milwaukee Brewers are going to the World Series. This team will go to the World Series.
I surrender all.
For the first time since 1982.
To thee, my blessed self, Frelick.
Your Milwaukee Brewers.
Surrender all.
They're going to the World Series. I've seen it. It's happening. We're going to talk about that, whether or not that's possible. Or it's certainly possible, whether or not it's going to happen. We've got another podcast coming this week. Again,
this wasn't supposed to be a full pod.
Dude, I don't know. It's, you know what? I'm not, why even sleep? It's Monday morning. the Packers and the Cowboys tied at 40. Did that happen still, like, in the recent past? So whatever. But yes, full pod. But more is coming. We've got a mailbag episode coming up. Send us your questions. You can find me and Kurt on Twitter, on Blue Sky. You can send me an email again, jradcliffe@gannett.com. Give us your questions and we'll do what we can. We'll answer your questions and see what else is lingering. What are the questions we still have as we get ready for the division series? October 4th, American Family Field, the Brewers against either the Cubs or the Padres. Brace yourselves for what is to come. Cubs-Padres, 1984 NLCS, I think, is when those two teams met. Probably more recently than that. I don't know. But
I wasn't born.
I was, but I was young. Very, very, very young. And I might be wrong. I don't know, but I think that's right. Okay, that'll do it for this edition of Microbrew. Here is Sal Frelick. Hope you enjoyed it. We will talk to you again very soon, everybody. Bye-bye. Get some sleep.
My guest is Sal Frelick, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers, about to head into his third postseason with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I want to talk about last year's to start with. But actually, my first question has to do with the Packers. You were at the Packer game. Do you know Jeff Hafley? Did you cross paths with him at all at Boston College?
Yeah, he was the coach when I was at BC.
Right.
Adazio was there my first year, but after that I was Hafley. And yeah, I got to see him at the game, said what's up, which was really cool. So good little connection there.
Did you that one year that you guys crossed paths at Boston College, did you get to talk to him then too, or was football kind of siloed off from baseball?
Yeah, a little siloed off.
Sure.
It was definitely more after I got drafted and just since I've been in Milwaukee and since he's gone to Green Bay. So
this means you're a Packers fan, right?
Yeah, I am. I am.
Okay. I want to go back to last year. You've talked a lot about this home run that you hit in Game 3, but I just want to go back there for a second. The moment is so strange because everybody's already going crazy after the Bowers home run. He's rounding third. You know, you only get one pitch after that. You swing at the next pitch. So did you know that when you walked into the box you were going to swing? I mean, what are you thinking as you approach the box? If you had seen Jose Budo before, I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Budo. I think I took the first pitch every single at bat the entire year.
Really?
And they went mound visit after JB hit the homer, and I could have told you they were telling him this guy's going to take the first pitch, get ahead of the fastball. So I was just like, all right, well, I'm not going to swing out of my shoes, but I'm going to be so early that if I miss it, it's going to be foul. You know, like I just really wanted to make sure I was on time. And luckily it was super on time. I was able to keep it fair. Yeah.
Were you able to enjoy the Bowers home run as much as everybody else?
For sure. For sure. Yeah, I was best seat for it on the on-deck circle, so.
As you look back, obviously it doesn't end well, but that is such a cool moment. And I know the fans will be thinking about that when they get back here for the playoffs again. I mean, have you watched the video of it? Do you think about it? Like, how does it resonate with you?
I obviously watched it, but not something I, you know, think about a ton.
Sure.
Just a little bittersweet ending. Like, I'd rather have struck out there. We won the game, obviously.
Sure.
But no, cool moment that I'll always remember for sure. And kind of my real first playoff, obviously my first playoff home, but first big playoff moment. And,
yeah.
You know, it's good to have been in those situations, like you said, be my third one, and should be fun.
How close were you to not playing in that series? It was, I mean, you dinged up running into a wall there right at the end of the season. How close was it to not being able to go?
Yeah, I was playing.
Sure.
It was an injury that was, you know, like a bone bruise, you know, a contusion or a hairline fracture, whatever they want to call. It wasn't like a pulled muscle or, you know,
sure.
A partially torn MCL, something where, like, there could be further damage. Like, it was really just painful. They gave me some really good meds, and we were good, yeah.
All right. Off the bat, Alonso's hit. Did you think you might have a shot at it at the wall? No,
I didn't. Usually on this wall, too, they have to be hit pretty high where, you know, it's coming down.
Yeah.
The ones that are hit low that are kind of still going up over the fence, you know.
So you knew.
Yeah, so I knew he got it pretty good, and I was hoping it would be to the left of the
cutout,
the cutout, because I thought I might have had a chance, or it just wouldn't have gotten out if it was to the left, but it was on the fence side, so
yeah.
Yeah.
When you went in the offseason, was it one of your goals to have more homers than you did in 2024? I mean, I'm sure power in general, but like did you envision yourself going from somebody who had two home runs to being a double-digit guy?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Obviously, the goal of every offseason is to get better, you know?
So, yeah, yeah.
And again, like, my goal is never to hit homers. That's not what I'm here for. That's not the kind of player I am. I obviously want to hit them, but the goal isn't going up to the plate thinking, how can I hit a homer? It's always going to be, you know, make sure I'm putting the ball in play, make sure I'm having good at-bats, and it's always approach-based for me, and I think you know, the biggest thing was just being able to use all fields more, be more gap to gap is where I want to see my power. And
sure.
I think focusing on that helped out in turn seeing a few more go out.
And in addition to that, you were competing for a batting title there for a while. Is that something that matters to you, that matters to players in general? You know, batting average isn't maybe what it used to be in terms of prestige.
Yeah, not crazy. I mean, it's important to me just because that's the one thing stat I care about. You know, like, for sure. I'm here to get on base, get hits, like, yeah, whatever way they come. If they're swinging bunts, if they're doubles off the wall, like, I don't care. Hit's a hit. And that's how I've always been. So just average in general, you know,
yeah,
is important to me. Not the batting title, but having a good average means that I'm doing my job, you know, so more so than, you know, OPS, more so than,
sure,
you know, whatever
slugging.
It might be,
yeah,
slugging.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
Yeah, it was important to me, and I was glad, you know, again, each year you want to get better, so I want to have a better one than I did last year. So I'm keep building off that.
Last two postseasons, you guys dove right in, wild card series. This year you get the week off. There are going to be a lot of opinions about whether it's good to keep the momentum or whatever. Obviously, logically, it's better to have that break. How do you feel about that? It seems like that's the obvious thing. Like, having the break is great.
I completely agree. I definitely see both sides. So you've seen the past few years, like the Diamondbacks, the Rangers, like these teams that were just got hot at the end of the season, went to the wild card, super hot, won, and then just rolled into a team that was, you know,
yeah,
on a week's bye. So I can see where they're saying from that. But at the same time, like, I think that bye is super important. One, just gets you passed around. And two, I think we got a lot of guys that can benefit from having a week off, you know, get some key pitchers back, get some guys healthy that, you know, you're overall banged up in September. So I think having that week is definitely a big advantage.
All right, Sal Frelick, thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.